Hello and welcome to the Sydney Institute podcast. The Institute is Australia's premier current affairs forum. Every week, contemporary political, social, cultural and economic issues are explored at the Institute through dialogue and discussion. This podcast was recorded recently at a members' forum in the city of Sydney. Thanks for listening, and for more information about the Sydney Institute, please visit www.thesydneyinstitute.com.au. We hope you enjoy this event.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I, of course, extend a very special welcome to the Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, who has kindly agreed to join us this evening to launch Gerard Henderson's new book. I'd like to welcome members of the Santa Maria family, Louise Adler and the team from Melbourne University Publishing, and of course Gerard and Anne Henderson and members of their family. I acknowledge that we are on Wurundjeri country, and I pay my heartfelt respects to their elders for deeply enriching Melbourne's cultural identity. My friends, in the more than 40 years that I've shared my life with Arnold Bloch Leibler, I've had the pleasure of hosting many interesting events, including the launch last year of Anne Henderson's book, Menzies at War. But I can truly say that this occasion to launch Gerard's new book, Bob Santa Maria, A Most Unusual Man, is truly unique. What makes it so, well, so unusual, is the bringing together of Bob Santa Maria, born 100 years ago and passed away some 17 years ago, a public intellectual of the calibre of Gerard Henderson, and our Prime Minister. These three towering public figures combined have together framed much of our nation's politics for more than 70 years. Our Prime Minister, Gerard and Bob, beyond sharing a close personal history, have also shared deep social convictions, profound moral values, and a probing activism born of their Catholic faith. On the Catholic social contract, I think we can all agree that I'm no expert, but I do understand from my own faith their fearless and tenacious commitment to justice, their pivotal view of the role of family in society, as well as the binding nature of principle over ephemera. From my tradition's perspective, or perhaps it's the lawyer in me, I also see these three giant figures sharing a profound understanding of the value of the written word. Bob's Newsweekly and television program, Point of View, captivated the attention of the nation. Gerard's Sydney Institute policy forums, books, columns and blogs are intrinsic to current political discourse in Australia. Tony Abbott, alone among Australian politicians who have sought the highest office of the land and attained it, forthrightly shares his values and perceptions with the Australian people in four books written between 1995 and 2012. Tony Abbott has described Bob Santa Maria as his first political mentor, and as I understand it, they first met in 1978, and of course by that time the DLP was no longer part of the Federal Parliament. Gerard uses the word unusual to describe Bob. I would consider adding that he was a complex man. Clearly, Bob was very fond and most encouraging of his young friend, Tony. But presumably in what he saw as in Tony's best interests, Bob, one would say, rashly declined to be referee for Tony's pre-selection for the seat of Warringah. Apparently, in Bob's view, joining the Liberal Party was a complete waste of Tony's time. Later, Bob and Gerard had a well-documented falling out, also over principle. But like all of you here and everywhere, I can't wait to learn a great deal more in Gerard's new book to be launched here today. Tony Abbott, a man committed to principle, is the Tony Abbott who took on Hansenism, has always proudly championed family values, deftly led Australians for constitutional monarchy, commits time, not just words, to Indigenous communities and Indigenous constitutional recognition. He openly questions whether the recent nuclear agreement with Iran will absolutely stop Iran getting nuclear weapons rather than just delay that outcome. He's been a staunch supporter of Israel and the Jewish community. He spearheaded the long overdue development of Northern Australia and begun the restructuring of our nation's manufacturing industry with a focus on the future through innovation and high tech. It's an extraordinary honour and privilege for me now to invite the Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, to officially launch Gerard Henderson's important new book. Please join me in welcoming our Prime Minister.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. It is lovely to be here, and it's great to see so many friends of BA Santa Maria's and so many people who appreciate the role he played in our public life over so many years. It's also good to have here today Brian Loughnane, the Federal Director of the Liberal Party, and Tony Staley, a former Federal President of the Liberal Party, another one of my political mentors, so much a political mentor that in fact it was Tony who launched the first edition of Battle Lines here in Melbourne some years ago. Well, we're here to celebrate a great book, and we're here to celebrate a great life. B.A. Santa Maria has been dead 17 years, held no public office, and claimed to have failed in all his principal endeavours, yet he has spawned a more extensive literature than most Prime Ministers. Gerard Henderson's life is the first full biography, but Santa Maria was the main subject of four earlier books, including Gerard's own Mr. Santa Maria and the Bishops, on his pivotal role inside the Australian Catholic Church. Why is this long-dead failure still fascinating? Why has one of our country's foremost public intellectuals devoted years to his study? Why indeed did the likes of Greg Sheridan and I drive to Melbourne several times in the late 1970s to attend Bob's conferences? Why did our nation's leaders regularly seek his counsel? And why was his last visitor the then Prime Minister himself? B.A. Santa Maria was, of course, a spellbinding speaker who often held audiences rapt for an hour without a note. It's hard now to know why the fact that 1976 was the 15th anniversary of the fall of Rome was so fascinating. But listening to Bob, it was. I can see you heard that speech, Gerard. He was a powerful and usually consistent polemicist in print, with a widely read and even more widely denounced news magazine that continues to this day, and a column in The Australian that ran for almost 30 years. Perhaps his legendary modesty, as our author suggests, was a little affected. Still, he wasn't too proud to spend many hours individually mentoring teenagers with promise, and would always take a call from any friend of the movement. He might have lost the fight for the soul of the Labor Party in the 1950s. He might have despaired of the direction of the church, despite admiring Pope John Paul II and Cardinal Pell, among many other prelates. He might have privately despised many of Australia's public figures, including some who had helped him. Yet if his life was the failure he often protested it was. It was a magnificent failure that changed and improved our country and hundreds, if not thousands, of its leading citizens. And of course, he was profoundly right on the big struggle that shaped our times. When the bullets of the communists hit the statue of Jesus outside the cathedral at Valladolid, for some it was just lead striking brass, he famously told the great Melbourne University Spanish Civil War debate, but for me they were piercing the heart of Christ the King. Santa Maria and the movement he helped to inspire and lead, working with Labor's industrial groups, did defeat communism inside Australia's trade unions. Arguably, this saved Australia from long-term industrial anarchy. Certainly, it saved the Labor Party as a middle-of-the-road social democratic party that could sometimes be trusted with government. After Doc Evatt's paranoid denunciation, like Moses, Santa Maria led his followers out of the Labor Party. And like Moses, he failed to find the promised land. Nevertheless, thanks to Bob Hawke, some eventually went back to Labor and helped to make that government the best Labor government ever. And thanks to John Howard, some found their way into the coalition and helped to make that government the best Conservative government, at least since Menzies. Santa Maria became the extra-parliamentary Conservative conscience of both parties, upbraiding Labor for its socialism and the coalition for its alleged heartlessness. And why not, as political parties, no less than individuals, are often improved when someone they respect calls them to account. In the first edition of his memoirs, contemplating the likely defeat of all his causes, Santa Maria observed, "In all this, we were but minnows swimming in great and stormy seas. Yet even the minnow must do what he can." Santa Maria was a pessimist who never gave up. His life exemplifies the difference you can make, even when you don't succeed. It demonstrates that a good cause is worth failing for. Will there be a revival of support for the traditional family? Will there be a restoration of authority and self-confidence within the Christian churches? It's hard to imagine, but much that's ridiculed today seemed self-evident a generation ago, and what the zeitgeist now condemns, it may one day again endorse. If that day comes, Santa Maria will seem more like a prophet than a failure, the Edmund Burke, perhaps, of Australian conservatism. Now, really, it is impossible to grasp Australian politics over the last 70 years without some appreciation of B.A. Santa Maria. Gerard Henderson has done signal service in producing this comprehensive and judicious life. And like so many of the best authors, he hasn't just studied the struggles he's written about, he's actually lived them. And that's what makes this account riveting as well as interesting. For me, launching this book is an act of piety towards my tribe. It's an act of piety towards someone who was, for some years, almost a father to me. He helped to shape me. He helped to shape us. He was indeed a most unusual man. He had to be to do what he did. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is a real honour as well as a pleasure for me to help launch this fine book.
Well, thank you very much, Prime Minister, and I'd like to also begin by welcoming the guests here tonight. My warm welcome to our Prime Minister, one of MEP's most loyal and generous authors, to our hosts this evening, Mark Liebler and ABL, for helping us to hold the launch, to current and former parliamentarians, to the Santa Maria family and distinguished guests. I should acknowledge that I do feel a little guilty reminding the Prime Minister of his duties as an MEP author, of importuning upon him all too frequently to launch our books. But I only felt a twinge of guilt tonight because I knew that when it came to the subject of BA Santa Maria, the PM has track record as an intelligent and thoughtful analyst. Some years ago now, I remember listening to him launch Patrick Morgan's edited collection of BA Santa Maria's letters for MUP, Your Most Obedient Servant. It was clear that Tony Abbott's relationship to Santa Maria was personal and professional, emotional and intellectual. So I could think of no one more appropriate to launch this biography. So thank you very much, Prime Minister. Your support has been invaluable to MUP. I know you support the Australian book industry, and I know we will have your support into the future. It matters a great deal in these challenging times for those of us who are committed to books about ideas, books that matter, books about the subjects like the one we're talking about today. The relationship between MUP and BA Santa Maria dates back a very long time, way back to the 1970s. We published, not before my time, of course, two of his biographical studies of Archbishop Mannix and Australia at the Crossroads. But B.A. Santa Maria was a prolific writer and at times even had to avail himself of the support of other publishers, including OUP, Campion Press, Connacourt and the Hawthorne Press. And I hope someone will illuminate what the Hawthorne Press was for me later. I suspect it might have been run out of the Santa Maria home. Perhaps Paul, I can see him nodding over there. In the last decade, MUP has continued to work on documenting the BA Santa Maria contribution to national affairs, with Patrick Morgan's edited collection of letters that I mentioned earlier, and then running the show, a compendium of selected documents from his professional life. Some years ago, we became aware of Gerard's interest in the biography of Santa Maria, that he was actually writing one, and we expressed our interest in publishing it once he was finished writing. Authors do come in a variety of personalities, but very few in my experience exhibit the fierce independence of Gerard Henderson. From the cover image through to the refusal in advance, which is very, very rare, to the guest list for tonight, and even through to the running order, he left nothing to MUP. So the idea of the publisher as the handmaiden to the author's creativity has been entirely incorrect in this instance. The author, Gerard Henderson, is in fact a slightly disturbing foretaste of the future of Australian publishers, where authors don't need us for anything. But for the present, thankfully, we still have some small role to play, at least in enjoying the launch. Now, biography is a problematic literary genre. Most of you here today will enjoy and savour the form. What is the biographer's responsibility to their subject, to their subject's reputation? What niceties should be observed regarding the subject's family and friends? Are the most interesting biographies those that take for their subject a flawed individual? Does the author actually have to like their subject? It's a painstaking craft, and I think when you read this book, you'll see the work and the research that's had to go into it. As one English historian remarked, biography is a definite region, bounded on the north by history, on the south by fiction, on the east by obituary, and on the west by tedium. And biographies of political figures must account for the man or the woman, for their talents and their peccadilloes, and for the larger world in which the subject operates. Biography is a delicate balance between detail and broad brushstroke, between chronology and anecdote, between the man in his times, his friends and his enemies. Gerard Henderson has been thinking about B.A. Santa Maria for many years, and this biography has been a lengthy project, and the result, I think, will provide readers with a really new and fresh and original interpretation of the life and the work. Biography at its best is a revelation. It offers us new insight into significant individuals, but also allows us readers privileged access to a conversation between the biographer and his subject. Please join me in welcoming the biographer to the microphone.
Just taking this one away and putting a Sydney Institute one behind us. No, we left ours back in Sydney. Yeah. Otherwise, we would have competed severely. Yes. Look, thanks to all of you for coming along this evening, and many thanks to the Prime Minister, especially for launching Santa Maria, a Most Unusual Man, and for being interviewed for this book some years ago. As I mentioned in the biography, in around 1978, Mr. Santa Maria counselled the young Tony Abbott, who was beginning to attain media attention concerning the consequences of the sin of pride. Bob Santa Maria said that if Tony Abbott was intent on pursuing a public career, then he should pray daily for the humility not to become possessed by fame and not to fall victim to the associated deadly sin of pride. Now, I am pleased that, in this instance, Tony Abbott rejected B.A. Santa Maria's spiritual advice. However, I remain concerned about the impact of this decision on the Prime Minister's prospects for eternal salvation. This is a matter about which I think every morning, every night, and frequently during the day. Yeah. So many thanks to Mark Liebler and the team at Arnold Bloch Liebler for their generosity in hosting this event, and as Mark said, they did AMS launch last year as well. Bartholomew Augustine Santa Maria, or Bob Santa Maria, or BAS, was born almost a century ago on the 14th of August 1915 in Melbourne. BAS's story is a Melbourne story, which I think we're going to illustrate now. It's a Melbourne story, as well as a national story. He grew up in Brunswick. He went to school in Brunswick, North Melbourne and East Melbourne, the birthplace of St. Kevin's College, and graduated in law and arts at the University of Melbourne in Parkville. He lived in Brunswick, Balwyn, Kew, and finally Balwyn again. He frequented the Carlton Football Club on Sydney Road, and he spent much of his time visiting Archbishop Daniel Mannix at St. Patrick's Cathedral in East Melbourne, or Dr. Mannix's residence, Raheen, on Studley Park Road, Kew. And then there is Collins Street. Bob Santa Maria commenced working in January 1938 at the Australian National Secretariat of Catholic Action in Collins Street. The original office of the Catholic Social Studies Movement, or the Movement, was also in Collins Street. Bob Santa Maria met Helen Power, his first wife and the mother of his 8 children, at the Central Catholic Library, just across the road here in Collins Street. Now, this map sort of demonstrates the areas where he went, and I've had a look at this map, and I want to interpret it for the Prime Minister, who had the affliction of being born in a state dominated by rugby union and rugby league. If you look at this map, what it actually tells you is that Bob Santa Maria spent a lot of time around the midfield and the half-forward line, only occasionally dropped down back to help out, and rarely, if ever, went to the interchange bench. And in a sense, that's what the book's all about. Now, when I was asked on the day after Bob Santa Maria's death by another publisher, not MUP, and I'm very glad I ended up with MUP, to write this biography, I remembered the bulletin cover story of the 15th of February 1964, which featured a photograph of Santa Maria on the Point of View set at Channel 9 in Richmond. And the profile was written by Peter Coleman, who described BAS as one of the three most conservative Australians of his time, along with Robert Menzies, the then Prime Minister, and Bert Everett, the previous Labor opposition leader. So I went around to Australian Consolidated Press, as it then was in Sydney, and managed to locate and purchase the bulletin photograph which appears on the cover of this book. And this is published for the first time in half a century, and that's the original bulletin cover, and this is the original photograph. In 1998, Russell Sefton at Channel 9 gave me footage of 7 Point of View broadcast, which were recorded in late 1966. I regard these as very significant because BAS had just turned 51 years of age at the time. He was at his intellectual height. And here is an edited version of one broadcast, which aired on Sunday, the 4th of September 1966, before the arrival of colour television.
How do you do? The expulsion of Captain Benson from the ranks of the Labour Party after 38 years' membership invites answers to a number of real, not merely formal, questions. In a sense, the banning of the Defend Australia Committee was not the central reason for the expulsion of Mr. Benson. To the pro-communist left which runs the Labour Party, it was no more than a convenient pretext. To Captain Benson, it was the last straw. The realities underlying the situation were that at a particular moment of time, the pro-communist left decided to use the federal executive and the Victorian executive of the Labour Party to get rid of the man they didn't want. The non-communist right wing decided that it wasn't worth a fight to prevent a colleague being railroaded. After the federal election, there will be a new leader of the Labour Party. The extreme left wants Dr. Cairns to fill Mr. Caldwell's shoes. The extreme left knew that by forcing Mr. Benson out of the party, it was knocking out a vote opposed to Dr. Cairns. Voters will draw their own conclusion when they see Mr. Benson banned or expelled because he supports the Defend Australia Committee, while 31 Labor parliamentarians can sponsor the communist-oriented Peace Congress and still remain honoured members of the Labor Party. The only other matter to be explained seems to involve the attitude of the so-called right-wingers. They involve themselves morally in the expulsion of Captain Benson, and they know it. Goodbye for the time being.
Now, the late Jim McClelland, the Whitlam government minister who attended St. Kevin's with BAS, advised me not to rush writing this book. It was wise counsel. In 2006, the Santa Maria family placed their father's correspondence and documents in the State Library of Victoria with a 40-year embargo, and I'm grateful to Kevin Malloy and his staff at the library for facilitating access. I spent many hours there. Patrick Morgan was given access beyond the embargo for his excellent two-volume collection of Santa Maria's papers, which was published by Melbourne University Press. The first, as Louise Adler said, Your Most Obedient Servant, was launched by Mr. Abbott in 2007. Frank Mount also recently wrote a valuable account of Santa Maria's involvement in Southeast Asia from the mid-60s to the mid-70s. And some years ago, MUP asked me to publish this book, and I'm grateful to Louise Adler and her team, Colette Vella, Catherine Game, Louise Sterling, Celine Heath, and Michelle Solid-Davis and others for their encouragement and advice. I think we all got on pretty well, I think. I only recall one significant disagreement when a proofreader wrote all over a manuscript page suggesting that I'd mistaken the Nicene Creed for the Apostles' Creed. This annoyed me immensely at the time, primarily because the proofreader was correct. And so both creeds get a mention in the book. Now, many of my staff and friends and family helped with this book, Anne, of course, plus my long-time executive assistant, Lolita Mathias, who typed and retyped the manuscript and many of the transcripts, and my Melbourne-based family, Veronica Henderson, Paul and Jenny Henderson, and my niece, Claire Henderson, and two of the Sydney Institute young casuals, Paige Halley and Anusha Rutnam, did great work on the photographs and the video. My friend, John McConnell, who was in the book, died a couple of years ago, and it's great to see Carol McConnell here this evening. I devoted my Menzies child book to my parents, who appear briefly in this book, and I've devoted this book to my Dargaville maternal aunts and uncles, Rita, Ellen and William, who were very good to me when I was young, and also to Eileen, who died as a very young girl, and to Ellen, who fell during the Third Battle of Ypres in November 1917. I will be writing about my personal relationship with Bob Santa Maria in my column in the Weekend Australian on Saturday, and talking about the book at the Sydney Institute in a couple of weeks' time. Tonight I want to conclude with a few brief recollections of a man who was always right about communism when many were not, who was a brilliant orator, a compelling writer, and possessed of invincible intellectual courage, but who, like all of us, was afflicted by the fall, translated, commonly known as original sin. I worked part-time for the National Civic Council in 1970 and 1971, and I had many conversations with BAS between 1965 and 1975. On one occasion, I asked him why he had moved John Martyr, who later became a Liberal parliamentarian from Western Australia, from the NCC's Melbourne office to its Perth office. And the conversation went something like this: why did you send John Martyr to Western Australia? And the answer came back quick as a flash: because I couldn't send him to Madagascar. Which I thought was a pretty good answer, depending, of course, on the question. On another occasion in the early 70s, I met BAS in the car park on his way to an NCC meeting at Belloc House in Sackville Street, Kew. As was his wont, Santa Maria was carrying a very large map of Southeast Asia on which numerous coloured pins were embedded, red for the communist forces, blue for the anti-communist forces, white for the neutral forces, and so on. And borrowing on a Frank Mount private joke, I went up to him and I said, be careful you don't drop the map. If you do, and the pins get returned to the wrong positions, it could change the whole strategic situation in Southeast Asia to our disadvantage. Bob Santa Maria was not amused with my irreverence, and he did not reply. I followed him up the hall, and soon Mr. Santa Maria commenced the meeting by placing, as he was wont to do, his large map on a frame and declaring to the assembled movement members, and I quote, as I was coming in today, I bumped into Gerrit in the car park. I said to Gerrit, I have to be careful not to drop this now. If I do, and the pins are replaced in the wrong position, it could change the whole strategic situation in Southeast Asia to our disadvantage. Whereupon the meeting burst out into hilarious laughter, led by the NCC president himself, whereupon I learnt there was such a phenomenon as a president's joke, and later on I learnt there was such a phenomenon as prime minister's jokes as well. Now, in conclusion, as I mentioned in the book, and as the prime minister stated, Bob Santa Maria had a tendency to speak at considerable length at meetings of the movement. John Cotter told me one such occasion when in Victoria the hotels closed at 6 o'clock. It was late in the afternoon on a hot Saturday summer's day in the years before air conditioning. James Macaulay, a political ally of Bob Santa Maria, was a brilliant poet, a fine academic, and an accomplished drinker. As Bob Santa Maria went on and on and on and on, Jim kept wistfully looking at the clock on the wall while dreaming of a few cold ones down at the local pub before 6 o'clock. He scribbled down a note in exasperation and passed it across the table to John Cotter. Now, Jim Macaulay's ditty was as follows. The clock strikes tick, the clock strikes tock, and if Bob keeps talking, it'll be 6 o'clock. And I think at that note, at 20 minutes to the hour, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much, Gerard. Wonderful, wonderful anecdotes. Well, last night we launched the Minister for Education, Christopher Pyne's book, A Letter to My Children in Adelaide. Christopher Pyne, in his speech, thanked Betty of Unley for buying 10 copies and pointed out that he wasn't pleased with Uncle John, who bought one copy and told the author that he'd share it with the rest of his family. Now, I'm under strict instructions from Gerard Henderson not to remind you that the books are on sale tonight, that his book in particular is on sale tonight. So I haven't told you that his book is on sale tonight, but you know what you need to do to support the Australian book industry. As the formalities draw to a close, can I ask if you will remain seated so that the author and the Prime Minister can come with us to the back of the room for some photos. Thank you very much for joining us, and please do stay for a drink. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Sydney Institute podcast. This podcast is proudly brought to you through the support of Microsoft Australia. We hope you enjoyed listening and can join us again soon.